Does everybody have a handout? Everybody has a handout? Everybody ready? All right, this is the first side of the handout is the side with the circle on it. That's what we're going to do first. So everyone's on the same page. Okay, can everybody hear me okay? All right, let's get started in prayer. Okay. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this evening. We thank you that we have made it to Wednesday, Lord. Thank you for the opportunity to gather together. And I pray that you just give me the words as I teach. And Lord, that things that are muddy would be made clear. And we would just be open and willing to learn. And it's in Christ's name I ask this prayer. Amen. Okay. So tonight, Dr. Cloud wanted me to cover the basic framework of the book, The Dynamic Heart in Daily Life, Connecting Christ to Human Experience. And so it's not a required text for the class, but it's on the supplemental text for the class. It's red, and it's in the bookstore downstairs. So it's by Dr. Jeremy Pierre. And luckily enough for me, I was in Dr. Pierre's class while he was publishing the book. So he was kind enough to give us sample chapters, but not kind enough to give us the whole book. So I had to wait till it came out. And when it finally came out, I discovered that it was what he did was beautifully articulate what he had taught us in his class, which is a framework for counseling. And the framework I still use today, it's basically the undercurrent of how I ask questions, why I ask questions. It helps you pull and make connections. So I think this is one of the most vital, like, important books in biblical counseling, or for those who just want to counsel their friends. Like, this is a huge text, and I've read it several times, and I found it best to color code it because there's three terms that we're going to learn about: cognitive, volitional, and affective heart responses. So on my third go around reading it, I took to color coding it, and that's been very helpful because then you can color code throughout the whole book. But that's just me, that's how my brain works. So, if you've been in here when I taught before, you know I like goals, keeps us on track. So the goals for tonight are: number one, understand cognitive, affective, and volitional heart functions and responses. Goal number two, figure out how this applies in counseling. And goal number three, to cover a case study, which I totally made up. No real people, no real scenarios. Viewing this case study through the framework of cognitive, affective, and volitional heart functions, which will be on the back of your handout, but we're not there first. We're not there yet. Okay. So, has anyone ever picked this book up before? Anyone know, seen this book? You do? Okay. Awesome. All right. So, goal number one, understanding cognitive, affective, and volitional. So, cognitive, from the Latin cognit, which means known. So, you know the word incognito, unknown. Cognitive means to know, okay? So, it refers to thinking. So, if you have your handout, this is where cognitive, let's hope I don't trip on this leash. This will be cognitive, top left, cognitive, refers to thinking, knowing, believing, reasoning, remembering, and interpreting. So it goes to thinking, knowing, believing, reasoning, remembering, interpreting. Okay, so we have the ability to think, basically. So Dr. Pierre gives us three parallel statements that coincide with these three things. And so I want you to write them down somewhere on the back, maybe. And the first one is, people are, in large part, what they know and understand. People are, in large part what they know and understand. And we know this biblically because we see that in the heart is where both wisdom and understanding dwell. So in 1 Kings 3:12 it says, "Behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I gave you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you." And again in 4:29, "And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore." Okay. 1 Kings 3:12. Internal dialogue occurs within the heart. Genesis 17:17. "Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, 'Shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?'" And then again in Genesis 24:45, "Before I had finished speaking in my heart, behold, Rebecca came out with her water jar on her shoulder." Okay. So, and then reasoning happens in the heart. Deuteronomy 15:9. "Take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart." Okay. "The thoughts of man which can be viewed by God are in our hearts." So Psalm 139:23 and Jeremiah 4:14. "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts." And then, "O Jerusalem, wash your heart from evil, that you may be saved. How long shall your wicked thoughts lodge within you?" The second one was Jeremiah 4:14. Excuse me. And the first one was Psalm 139:23. And then in the New Testament, in Luke 9:47, "But Jesus, knowing the reasoning of their heart, took a child and put him by his side." And then Mark 8:17, "Jesus, aware of this, said to them, 'Why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened?'" Thus, the human heart responds cognitively through rational processes based off of knowledge and beliefs. The human heart responds cognitively through rational processes based off of knowledge and belief. Okay, so the next spot on our handout is going to be affective. It's going to go right here in the top right. So, it's the affection. It's exactly what it sounds like. The way your heart responds as a feeler. Your feeling heart. Okay? Exactly what it sounds like. Desiring, valuing, feeling, emoting. Desiring, valuing, feeling, emoting. So we respond effectively through a framework of desires and emotions. So your second one of the parallel statements is, people are, in large part, what they desire, value, and feel. People are, in large part, what they desire, value, and feel. And we see this biblically where the heart expresses joy. Where it says, "Because you did not serve the Lord your God with joyfulness and gladness of heart." In Deuteronomy 28:47. Your hearts will rejoice. John 16:22. The heart expresses sorrow. "Even in laughter the heart may ache, and the end of joy may be grief." Proverbs 14:13. Sorrow has filled your heart, John 16:6. Anguish, my anguish, my anguish. I writhe in pain. Oh, the walls of my heart. My heart is beating wildly. I cannot keep silent, for I hear the sound of the trumpet, the alarm of war. Jeremiah 4:19. In sympathy, my heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. Hosea 11:8. And human desire takes place within the heart. May He grant you your heart's desire and fulfill all your plans. Psalm 24. And then we see in Matthew 6:21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Thus, we respond effectively through a framework of desires and emotions. Okay, so we have cognitive and affective, two responses. Our third response, our third and last response, we have volitional. That's at the bottom. Okay. So the intentional heart. This includes willing, deciding, intending, committing, and acting. And your third parallel statement. People are, in large part, what they choose to be. People are, in large part, what they choose to be. So think about that for a minute. This does not mean, let's go with this example, I like Law and Order. So does that not, that doesn't mean like I choose to be Detective Olivia Benson, so that is in large part who I am. No, that does not mean that. That means, I mean, I wish it meant that, but it doesn't. It means that what we choose to do, our string of life choices, helps us become who we are. I went to college. I went to seminary. I went to seminary again. Studied counseling. Now I'm a biblical counselor. Chose to study that. Made choices to study that. And that's a large part of who I am. Volitional. I acted upon those. So this involves intentions and choices. Our heart's intentions drive our actions. For example, intentions are attributed to the heart. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Matthew 5:28. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In Matthew 15:8. But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person. Matthew 15:18. 18. Okay. So, all three of these are essential to our heart response. And all three of them affect one another. They are all three overlapping and acting at the same time. We are not simply thinkers, nor are we simply emotional, or are we a robot and we just act. We have all three at the same time. What'd you say? Not at the same time, no. I'd say that's when problems can arise, when one gets lopsided or... But
I guess what I'm saying by that is that there are different personalities and different...
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And not everyone has the same capacity in that. So. Mm-hmm. So, any questions so far before we move on to goal number two? Okay. So, seeing how this applies to counseling... Our heart responses. So, now we're going to add to our diagram on the outside. So, within our own hearts, We see the cognitive, affective, and volitional are at work simultaneously in affecting each other and also ourselves. So, at the same time as all of these are interplaying, we have external circumstances as well. So our external circumstances are going to be, first, up here, the triune God. And that's interplaying. And this, we're just going to draw a heart. It's going to be kind of lopsided, but bear with me. Then we're going to... This is going on the outside of the graph. So it will look like this when we're done. Yeah, it goes up top. This, yeah, yours is a circle. I did a heart. That threw you off? I'm sorry. Just pretend. Here, look, I'll break it up like that. Is that good? Okay. All right. Then we have others over here. Keep in mind, I'm not an artist. Others are affecting. Okay. And then we have ourself. And then we have a little basketball of circumstances. AKA life. Affecting. Okay. Everybody got that? Yeah. Oh, wait, I didn't write others right here. These are others, in case anybody was wondering. Now, we could do a really good job by ourselves and our corrupt hearts, because it says, Scripture says, the heart is deceitful above all things, right? And desperately sick, who can understand it? To land ourselves in a counseling office or wherever, if it was just our hearts and our own self. But you throw all these other things on top, and it gets a lot more complicated. And a lot more trouble comes in to play. So, the reason for the importance of understanding the heart responses is it helps the counselor detect heart issues and problems. So, yes, as a blanket statement, all sin is a form of idolatry. Yes, because it's putting something else before God. Sin. But no, counseling does not boil down to that one statement. It's not a, okay, go deal with it, fix it attitude. It's a constant unwinding process of responses, compassionate speaking the truth in love, a process of pulling back the responses, right, and replacing and developing them with God-honoring responses. Okay, so, for example, use this illustration. Have you ever seen a children's flap, like a little flap book, where you can pull the flaps and you can see what's behind them? So, that's kind of what counseling is like. Skillfully pulling back the flaps and seeing what hidden behind there. Like, what are your responses? Okay? And you have to have cooperation, of course, to pull back the flaps to see what's hidden. And sometimes you have a page that has two flaps, and you pull them back, and you see, oh, okay, there's a connection here. So, we're not always aware of the connection, which is why we need help from another objective perspective on the outside. So, as a counselor, you're always looking for how someone's heart responds in context. So, how are they responding cognitively, affectively, volitionally, to God, to self, to others, and to circumstances? So, ignoring any of these responses will result, as Dr. Pierre says, in lopsided counsel. So you can't just look at the circumstances and say, oh, well, they're depressed because their spouse just died. They have, you know, their whole financial foundation is crumbling. That's why they're depressed. No, there's all this other stuff going on and they're responding to as well. So each one of us is a whole person. Like I said before, we're not just emotions. We're not just desires. We're thoughts, emotions, actions. And as counselors, our job is to address all three of the responses. Okay. Any questions here? Or any comments?
What is the relationship to, like, looking at the heart and thinking that's a person thinking, feeling, action? And all of a sudden there's another self outside.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that self outside?
Well, you're physical.
Okay.
You have physical problem.
Like you have a broken leg, that's mm-hmm. nothing to do with necessarily it'll impact that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's
yeah.
simple enough. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
I feel like it's hard to always separate the three. Like you know that they're the three components, but like to tease out like what's really cognitive, what's really effective, and what's really I guess because it seems like to me like the volitional side of things like those might you know proceed from your like the affective side of things. So it seems like even though you're breaking them apart they're all kind of meshed together at the same time.
Yeah. They're definitely all affecting each other. But like you said, your affective can affect your volitional. So if you're more of a feeler, like he said, they're all different. There's all different levels. Some people are more prone to make decisions based off their feelings. That's why the interplay is so important. And then some people are just logical. I mean, I don't know. I'm not one of those people. But so that's gonna affect them more. Yes.
Because the idea is being a healthy place is to have all of those areas connected to God.
Yeah. Yeah. But yes, the question was, is it hard to tease out which one is which?
Yeah.
And I think it is hard to tease out in the beginning. And then some things are just really difficult, so they're going to be hard to tease out. But in that, unless you're sitting down making a chart, like after you meet with someone and saying, okay, this is what they're doing effectively, this is what they're doing cognitively, then, I mean, that would make it easier to, like, okay, let me think through this. And that's why, you know, when you're going through certification, you do case write-ups. Like, it helps you say, okay, this is my process. And once I've done this process 50-plus times, it becomes easier to just be like ingrained in you. Be like, now I know exactly what that is. Like, so it becomes, that's why this is the framework. I would say when you're pulling back the flaps, right, it's kind of almost, I hate to use the word triage, but it's almost like triage. Like if someone is having an affair, you need to stop that. Like now let's address the volitional so we can get to the cognitive, so we can get to the affective. So it just depends on the session and the person and what the issue is. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Well, I'm going to turn off my recording because I'm going to do a case study and I'm going to read it, but my case study is completely made up. I wrote it. No real persons are depicted. No. No real scenario is depicted.
Surely somewhere out there there's somebody.
Surely there's someone out there living it, but I don't know them. But I don't know them. So I'm just going to turn this off because hopefully we'll have a lot of dialogue. That's what my goal is, a lot of dialogue, a lot of mingling. So good night, recording. Found the button. Where's the button? Okay. Okay, well, Frank the Third, dear Frank the Third, don't record this part. Okay. But like I said, not a real person. All right, so we're going to have to listen. Everyone ready to listen to the case study? Okay. And I'll repeat whatever parts I need to repeat. But flip your hand out on the back and get ready to take notes. Okay. No, we're doing it again.
But I mean, I already written on my back.
Oh, you saw lots of space. Well, you might need another piece of paper. Okay, there's more in the back. All right, case study. Lisa, a.k.a. fictional person, Lisa is a 26-year-old teacher at a public high school. She has been married for 4 years and has a 2-year-old daughter. She and her husband regularly attend a Southern Baptist church close to their home. She grew up going to church, and her husband became a believer in college. She recently became pregnant, but they lost the baby. She believes that the Lord has a purpose for her pain, but she cannot see it yet. She came in to see you because she is having angry outbursts toward her husband at the drop of a hat. She is also having angry outbursts towards her mother and father when they offer to keep her 2-year-old daughter or help her out in any additional way. Her husband suggested she go see her doctor about anti-anxiety medication, but she does not want to go that route. Because of his suggestion, she flew off the handle again and threw her cell phone across the room. She said she is also not sleeping at night, and she says she thinks it is due to the demands of having a husband, a small child, and a full-time job. Any questions about this? This is all the information you're getting. Don't try to add.
Could you read the part after the miscarriage again?
She recently became pregnant, but lost the baby. She believes that the Lord has a purpose for her pain, but she cannot see it yet. Is that good? You want me to go more? Okay. So this is only the information we've been given. Based off of the small glimpse, what is the cognitive in this situation? What is she believing, knowing, remembering, interpreting?
She believes that God has a purpose, that this is all happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And she's thinking that the sleeping is due to the full-time job and the stress and the hope.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that she thinks and believes right now.
Okay. What else is she believing? She's entitled to a full night's sleep. Okay. Okay.
Maybe she thinks that her parents and her husband don't think she can handle her life, and misinterpreting might be the wrong category what they're trying to do.
It's good. Yeah.
Not accepting the help.
Yeah.
What you're saying. Not accepting
yeah.
her advice.
Well, it's an attack, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she believes. That's the key. She's believing it's an attack. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay. So what is the effective? What is she feeling? What is she desiring? What is she valuing?
She feels very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And violent.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed. Yeah.
Apparently feels like her phone is bouncing.
Mm-hmm. Chunked it. Okay.
Oh, I never heard that.
Yeah, she threw her phone across the room. And that, you know, that is very common. No, she not threw herself. She threw her cell phone. Oh, goodness gracious. Cell phone. I'm nostalgic. I'm back in 1996. Your cell phone, not your phone or your cell. Okay. She threw her iPhone across the room. Her mother and father. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said she... What? So that's a good point. She said she has trust in God, but what are her... We're not there yet, but when we get to the volitional, the thoughts and the perceptions don't match up with the volition.
Which could be interpreted as she's really blamed herself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that she did something wrong to cause
it. Yeah.
Or that she can't act out against God, so she acts out against everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She apparently believes she has pain.
Mm. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Just herself. So the feeling that could be selfishness. Could throw that in there. But no one wants to say that, do they? Because she lost her baby. No one wants to say selfishness. That's really difficult to reconcile in our minds. Yeah. It's really difficult.
You didn't want to start there.
No.
Certainly want to help her, like, heal from that horrible loss.
Compassion.
Yeah.
Speaking the truth in love. You don't want to start there. No. Go ahead.
She's desiring a solution. She's desiring it all to be in the right place.
Yes. It's good. Desiring, wanting to be in the right place. Right, because remember, if you were here last semester when I taught, emotions require beliefs, right? So the affective, in order to have an emotion, you have to have a belief. Okay, anything else?
The statement that she believes the Lord has a purpose for her pain, does she believe that he has a purpose for her loss?
Mm-hmm.
One thing to say, I'm sure he's going to use my pain, but it's another thing to say, I know he's going to use these trials and that he's given me an opportunity to grow and to learn, you know, to glorify him and all things, which she does not do.
Mm-hmm. No. Because this is an initial. This is your initial meaning.
She's saying that's not what her heart really is.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming out of her mouth, but her actions are totally 180 degrees.
Yeah. Okay, so what is the volitional? What is she doing? Throwing herself.
throwing
her phone across the room. Okay, okay, what is she willing? She's deciding, intending, committing, and acting.
Mm-hmm.
Anger outburst, yes.
Right, her husband is saying that maybe she should go, like, to a psychiatrist or something.
Mm-hmm. Confusing and refusing help.
Sure. Would you put that under volitional, rejecting help?
Yeah, she's deciding. She don't need help. Making or deciding,
what
acting
about
on it.
Sleeping?
Yeah.
Would that go under volitional?
Mm-hmm. Or you would do circumstances.
Okay, I gotcha.
That would be circumstances.
She can't control the walls.
Mm-hmm.
No. She just doesn't trust anybody at the mm-hmm. moment. She's just a backup case with that role. And she's just bouncing all of them together.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of control, mm-hmm. not to control the people, but to control herself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else?
Well, I think deciding not to go to the doctor. Well, I think her husband's saying you might need some pills or something. Probably didn't.
Really not tactful.
Not yeah.
Yeah, he. But it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like it could be some postpartum depression as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hormone. I mean, there could be an actual physical response
mm-hmm.
to that's not helping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Circumstances, yes. Mm-hmm. And a 2-year-old. So, here's the question. Yes. Were you going to say something?
Is it a decision on her part that she's seeing things as too difficult, like having to work or maybe blaming her husband? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know,
I don't think that's considered a circumstance. I think that's a thought process.
Yeah,
like, she is. It is too difficult. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Resenting. I would put that in affective. Resentful. So here's the tough part. How do you help her?
Start
what do you do first?
Start with forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
She's got to let that go and get her hang mm-hmm. on to that anger and that bitterness. You can let it go.
Mm-hmm.
She's got to forgive this awful thing and learn to be able to cope with it.
But who does she have to forgive?
God.
Where is that biblically, though?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're forgiving would be someone who committed a sin. So, but there has been no sin committed to forgive. So, but you're thinking the right way. You're on the right track with the you have to process this. But what is the first step in processing all of these things? It's a good place to start.
Instead of dismissal or blame or whatever, you are basically acknowledging / accepting. You're
coming to terms.
Validating.
Mm-hmm. You're coming to terms with. Yes, you're coming to terms with what happened.
Expectation. A huge part of expectation is. This should be the way I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
Mm-hmm.
So the response is for me to throw a tantrum.
Mm-hmm. So disappointment was what you're saying. The unmet expectation is disappointment. Mm-hmm. But when there's something that really is a disappointment, where do you take someone with a loss like this? With a miscarriage? Yeah. So where?
Just the gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Who she is. I mean, if she's a believer.
Mm-hmm.
What
past.
Mm-hmm.
Where God is there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you trust Him.
That's a huge next step. Can you trust? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, but it's the first.
Yeah, I guess
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because once you get out, you can question your way out of a paper sack in this, because there's so many questions to ask.
Well, how do you take her through the grief cycle?
Mm-hmm.
But she's got to go through that.
So what you said is lay it all out there. That's not lopsided. Like, tell me what you feel. Well, in that, what are you thinking? In that, you also told me you're throwing stuff and yelling. So, getting all the parts. And then the next step, that's what he said, you're pulling those flaps back. Like, where do I go next? And grieving is big, because you have to grieve, you have to acknowledge, and then you have to trust again. So, it's going step by step, pulling those flaps back one by one, asking the right questions. But the first one, Gloria said, you go to hope, right? After she unpacks all this, what do you say? Do you say, oh, rats? Like, I mean, what do you say? Do you say, I'm sorry? Like, yes, Pastor Wicklund? Mm-hmm.
So there is maybe a starting point. Okay, mm-hmm. You're grieving. There's loss. I mean, this is how long ago did she have the miscarriage?
It doesn't say.
So
you want to find that out, though.
Yeah. So maybe with that truth that she even believes herself and has stated herself, okay, we don't understand. We can't mm-hmm. see. Mm-hmm. Anger, sadness, sorrow, and probably have the lament.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we definitely go to the lament.
Mm-hmm.
She's grieving. But she herself has said a truth that maybe we can give the camp.
Yeah, she said a truth. So that's a great point, because that goes to reflecting back what you've heard. It shows you've listened. It shows you've remembered what she says. And because she said it herself, you're like, what? You said it, and I believe that's true. And that also encourages her. That, oh, wait, I did say something that was good. Because there's also a lot of things she's saying that are wrong, or doing that are wrong, that eventually you'll have to address. But by encouraging first, like, no, you said this, and you're right.
Builds on the truth. Mm-hmm. That she's
Yeah.
Does she not want to direct her anger towards God? So therefore, she's directing it towards her husband, her mm-hmm. parents, others around her.
Mm-hmm. She's directing it there, but it's still...
Right.
She hit the nail on the head. She's angry at God.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's...
Because if we believe God is sovereign, who is anger really?
Yeah. How do you know? Lolly right here. It's sin. It has to do with sovereignty of God. That's what all sin is.
Yes.
Job,
Lolly. You did good. You did good. Yeah. You have the Bob Newhart approach. stop it. Just stop it. Okay. Does anyone have any other follow-up questions? Or is anyone confused, cries of outrage? Anything?
I think,
yes.
I think one thing to ask, and maybe you said this, and I don't remember, what were the circumstances of the miscarriage?
Yeah. I didn't say.
Oh, okay.
That's a question you would ask her.
Because if it was, you know, the doctor told her not to run, and she decided she knew better, and she was running every day, maybe she feels she's responsible.
Mm-hmm. There's a guilt, and there's
maybe there's.
But there can be a bunch of reasons for guilt to enter into that. But yeah.
Right. But I mean, I think that would be a big question. What were the circumstances? Sometimes I'm told they just happen.
Most of the time, I think.
What about what do you mean by purpose? That the Lord has a purpose for my pain. Tell me where that comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Just to let her kind of expound on it and make sure her theology has, even as little as she's indicated, has a solid foundation.
Yeah.
So that you're not building on a false foundation. Because it sounds good just in that.
That little window.
But you want to make sure that if you're going to build, you're building on the right foundation.
Yeah. And you want to get there, but you don't want to overwhelm someone on the first time. Like, yeah, you do want to build good theology, but you want to give someone who is this far in about this much truth. Like, because you're like, well, she said this, and she said this, and she said this, and she said this. Well, they're not focusing on anything. They're just like, oh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You want to give them this much. Like, yeah, that's great. And let the Lord do the work through that. Like, know that the Lord's word doesn't return void, and like, that's going to do the work. So just that little bit's going to do all the work. And that sounds like, oh yeah, really? But I see it every day, so I will attest to it. So, yes.
But it's not like a great man in there and she does some of the single stuff I felt. Why is the worst coming out and the good going in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that, yes, you're right, you have a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but God is God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that she can hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on to that. You did say something she could be using.
Mm-hmm.
Things are simple.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about taking everything. Sometimes you reaffirm, you're okay, you're going to get through.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good point to have a tool in your counseling tool belt, is to have one of those go-to places. Like my go-to, like if some people come in my office and it's like spur of the moment, like someone just gets in my office, and that hasn't happened in a while, thankfully, but I have one in my mind, and it's usually Psalm 27:13-14. I believe I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. That's my go-to. Because goodness, and land of the living, like, yeah. Mm-hmm, 13 and 14. But you want to have those go-to hope-filled verses. Because everyone has the thou shalt not down pat. So you want to give hope. Like, find your go-to hope-filled verses. And you don't want to build false hope, but you want to, but that's not what you're speaking of. But, so, yes. Anybody else? Killed it. Y'all did really good on that case study. Do you think that this is something that you can, yeah.
Done?
Yeah.
Wow, it's almost as fast as you.
Yeah. Does anyone have any questions about the cognitive, affective, and volitional? Like the framework and how to put things in those categories.
Where would you go from here, or are we really done? I mean, where would you take some of these and begin to start, okay, second or third, maybe whatever, begin to start asking some questions to start getting down to some of her simple responses to this situation?
I'd say that would take time because of the grief.
Right. You stick on the grief, try to work through some of that.
Yeah, I would. Like, Michael said, he said, take her to the laments. Let her lament. And you don't know what's going to come of a lament of a Psalm 77. Have her write it in her own words. That way you get a good picture of her grief. And then from that, you can probably build questions. Well, what were you thinking when you wrote that? And then you get a better picture. Well, why were you thinking? And that also helps you tease out theology as well.
Seems like the volitional would be one of the hardest areas to really address, but also one of the most that have like the biggest opportunity for change. Because once you get to the cognitive and the affective part of it, then you get to the volitional, and I think that in counseling, it can be really hard to like take responsibility for those areas where we've taken, where we bear responsibility for like what's going on. But I think once we learn how to take responsibility for what we can take responsibility for, that's where it changes.
Yeah. And volitional is what you really see the most affected. And, you know, what people are doing, it's really hard to confront. Like, if you don't have that gentle confronting. Like, Dr. Eirik does a fantastic job because he is very unassuming and kind and has a lovely disposition and bedside manner. You know, like, he can pretty much, like, say something and you're like, oh, you're right, I shouldn't be doing that. But if someone like, you know, Dr. Clotter, myself, I have a little more stern exterior, as does he, and you're like, you get more pushback. So you have to know how to say, like, this is, you know, you really shouldn't throw your phone across the room. You could have hit your 2-year-old. You could have, you know, like, just, you know, just have to figure out how to say those things and address those things in the right way.
And I can say the same thing. They're like,
no,
like she knows what she's talking about.
Tact.
It's amazing.
Tact. Yeah. It's a skill to develop. Right. We don't want to lose control of a session. You want to keep it on track. You want to have questions. But, like, interject. You know, like, it's okay to interject. Like, well, wait a minute, let's go back to that. You know, like, insert. So you have a goal. So it's not just a venting session. It's like we have a goal. I have questions with a point in mind. I used to go into cases with a cheat sheet because I was so nervous as a 27-year-old. But now my prayer life has definitely expanded. And in that, trusting the Lord in a new way. Like, the Lord is going to call to mind what questions I need to ask and trust that. And that takes time. If you want to write down questions on your cheat sheet, write them down. Like, ask those questions. And sometimes, like, I'll be studying my Bible and I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to ask that question. And I'll write it down. And I'll have it. And you have to wait for the time where you can ask that question. But if you need to ask questions, like, if you think of questions that need to be asked, yes, ask them. But there's also a natural flow that happens when you are dependent upon the Lord. Like, I'm 29. I don't have a lot of life experience per se, and like, I'm not married, I don't have kids, but I am solely dependent upon the Lord to bring those questions to my mind and say, okay, well, let's talk about this. Have you considered this? So,
yeah.
Yes, definitely. And normally I always ask that. And on our intake form, they're supposed to write the last time they've been to the doctor and their report. But some people don't want to share that information, which is totally understandable. But you do want to ask those questions. You just want to be diligent because, you know, like we talked about before, you might have a thyroid problem if you're anxious and depressed. And the thyroid problems can manifest in, like, what sounds like a manic episode almost. So you definitely want to cover that, and especially with medical problems and women and hormones. And I'm not medically educated, but I do know enough to say you probably need to go get a checkup. So that's the extent of my medical knowledge. Have you gone to get a checkup? So hard. You want to come up with little tips on how to go to sleep. Put your screen away 30 minutes to an hour before you go to sleep. Put the baby down and, you know, get some help. Ask for some help in those areas. So practical things you want to think about as well. Yeah. Yes, Bing Crosby it is. Yes, that's good. That's a good question, because you would be surprised how many people that happens. You're like, you're not getting any sleep because the 2-year-old's kicking you, waking you up. That's very common.
Or peeing in the bed.
Yeah, all the things. All the things. So, yeah. Anything else before we go? Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So, but other people have been down this road and are further along.
Yes.
So, thinking about that, that maybe someone has been down this path, they've experienced what you're experiencing now, they've had healing in their life through this, and they're at a place where they understand some of what God's providences and so His care for them through this are. Would you, in this situation, maybe, you know, try to bring someone in that if that's experienced something like that in their life, to try to connect them with this mother?
Yes, but not initially, because you want someone to process their pain and not project,
right.
Well, I experienced this. Let them go through counseling sessions and then say, I like that, and that's the beauty of counseling in a local church. You can connect people that way. So yeah, that's definitely something I would want to do. Like, I'd like to set you with a mentor, because one of the goals of counseling in the church setting is handing people off to discipleship, handing them back to their Sunday school communities, and we're fans of keeping people in their local church that they're already in. So you want to call their minister and say, hey, what is your form or method of discipleship? How can we integrate these people back into care? And that means someone who can identify and walk alongside. So, yeah, it's a great point.
It sounds like advocacy. Do you find that not always, but occasionally have advocates that work with you or alongside the people who come? I know there's one case study that talks about
advocates. We that's on our docket of things to do at the counseling center, is to develop counseling advocates. We haven't had a chance to do that yet. We're right now, we have lay counselors, and we have shepherding couples within the church, but we eventually want to enfold some of those people who feel like they're called to do that into being actual advocates. And that would include basic, like, we would want to only do that with church members because of confidentiality and the nature of counseling and keeping it professional. So it would be church members, they'd want to do that. Like, who want to do that? Who would, sign the confidentiality? Yes, I'd like an advocate to come with me, to walk alongside me. That's one of our goals, but for right now, it's handing them back to their Sunday school and discipleship communities, small groups. But But yeah, great point. And that's something we definitely want to look into and start doing in the future.
And when it comes to the initial first-time visit and it's an issue of spousal abuse or suicidal thoughts, and you know that I need to cover certain things immediately because of the immediacy of the problem, do you have in those cases already a set goal by the end of the first session of things that have to be
Yes, we have. Mm-hmm. We have a policy. We have protocol. We default to that. Like I have a suicide policy. Like I have an anti-suicide agreement. If it's a child, I say, listen, you sign this. Your parents sign this. We're going to talk to your mom about this. You know, and I tell them that beforehand as well. And so, like, that's part of our policy, but we have policies in place to address physical safety right off the bat. If someone calls in and says they're going to commit suicide, which has happened before, I tell them that you need to go to Brookwood. You need to go to Brookwood right now. Like, you need to, are you home alone? Is there someone there I can talk to? You know, like, that's, we have a protocol in place for that. Like, yeah, goals automatically go physical safety. So. Which is really difficult, but easy at the same time. So, does that make sense?
What's the difference between an advocate and a mentor?
I don't know if there is one. I don't know. I think a mentor. So advocates would only be from someone who's going into counseling. Mentors can be for anyone, but advocates. Are like, we're in the counseling process together. I'm going to advocate for you on your behalf, walk you through this. They could develop into mentors. Like, some of my counseling cases develop into discipleship. And I'll go to a coffee shop and meet with someone. And it just depends on the person and the role you're playing and the role you want to play and the role they allow you to play.
Chelsea, what's an advocacy situation?
Mm-hmm. Problem-oriented. Yeah, they would know how to... what the process was, they'd have training, mentors are just mentors. I don't really have a specific answer for that question. So.
But an advocate would be something that particular counselor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That might help, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You say experience, it not might help, but I wouldn't
say that has to be. No, like a shared experience.
Yeah, someone who's like, oh yeah, I'm like someone who's been an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, not necessarily. Yeah, or that would X me out of the running for a lot of things.